Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Thursday evening by Jovan Buha of the Buha's Block and of the Lakers Collective. And Jovan, it struck me as you were getting ready to hop on here that I never recapped the season. we just dove right in.
It's a good thing to do. Yeah, recap the season.
Right. It's like
it's a couple days late. It's okay.
Because like the way that it played out in my brain, it was like, all right, well, we had the season ended and you kind of recapped the game, recapped the series, and then the next day you had JJ and Rob speak. And then Harrison is on the show. And so Harrison just kind of guides the show wherever he wants to go. And I was like, shit, I've never
run it
contextualized.
Run it back. that's what I think of when I think of Harrison.
Just constantly. It's a good thing he doesn't have access to the sounders and to the clips on the show, cause he would just keep at that. So, today we are going to look back on this season and try to decide whether or not we consider it a success. We will also look ahead, to the off season that is to come. And I think the reason that I jumped straight into off season mode is because it's such a critical off season, right? And because last year felt like such a placeholder type season, now is when the season really kind of gets going, or the Luka era really kind of gets going. So we'll take a look at what that's looking like. We've had some fun reporting on the relationship between LeBron and the Lakers that I'm sure will come up at some point over the course of the show as well. But yeah, bud, how you holding up? How'd the season treat you? Are you rested and ready for? It's funny. All of my friends, I know you get the same thing. All of my friends and family go like, it must feel good that the season is over. And I'm like, this isn't.
No,
I don't get to kick my feet up.
No. We could get to that point in like late July. I would say you have like late July to early September is our off season from like a content creation and reporting perspective. But things are good. I took a little sabbatical for like a day and a half and just didn't reply to any texts. I still did some interviews, but like I that's like my version of taking a break is I didn't do anything on my show or channel. And I'm feeling, better, I would say, than I did a couple of days ago. Coming off of game four, it was like a 4-hour night for me. I went to bed at 5, got up at 9 for exit interviews. So I would say I'm doing better than then, but excited to dive into all the offseason stuff and recap the season.
All right. So quick reminder before we do that, please hit like, please hit subscribe, turn on notifications for the channel. This show is brought to you in video form in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 of free lineups when you sign up and play a $5 lineup of your own. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts, preferably on Odyssey. But I do not care where it is that you get them. They all count the same to me. All right. So Yeah, the season was interesting, and I keep on framing it, at least to myself, from the standpoint of I think it was a success given the parameters that they operated under or that they kind of set for themselves. But I also can't help but wonder if years down the road they might regret setting those parameters. And whether last season when Austin was on such a cheap contract compared to what he's going to get paid this summer with LeBron still playing at the level that he was playing at and with Luka even at the number that he was at compared to where, you know, when his extension kicks in, whether that might have been the best opportunity that the Lakers had to really kind of go for it. Also, before Wemby really kind of comes into his own right in this upcoming, like we're looking at, I believe, the rise of the next, you know, best in the world who's going to hold that mantle for quite some time. It looks like OKC doesn't look like they're going anywhere. Maybe this was an opportunity to maybe get at them. How are you going to remember this season?
It's a good question. I really like what you said about the parameters, because I've been saying something along those lines too, in terms of, I think based on those parameters, they knocked it out of the park, but my counter argument has been, I don't think they had to put those parameters on themselves. And mm-hmm. I think the people who solely base their analysis of the season or their moves under those parameters, like, sure, it's going to be like an A+, but when you factor in, they could have been more aggressive in trying to improve the roster. They could have tried to get off of certain contracts or invested more in the roster with draft capital. Then that's where I think that grade, you know, dips a bit. But I think the first word that comes to mind is resiliency. I think there were several mm-hmm. points this season where the Lakers could have just let go of the rope, or things could have unraveled based on half of the roster being impending free agents, and not only half the roster, but two of their top three players being impending free agents, and like multiple. I would say that the Lakers, on balance, six best players this season were Luka, LeBron, Austin, Marcus, Rui, and DA. Five of those guys are free agents. And then if you want to even keep extending that, it's like Luke's a free agent, Jackson's a free agent. So it's not just like that they're half the roster is free agents. It's basically like the prominent part of the rotation, with the exception of Luka, are all free agents. So with guys playing for contracts and guys playing for their status within the team, that could have gone a variety of directions. And there were points of the season it looked like it was potentially going mm-hmm. in some of those directions, but they found a way to rally. I've been breaking the Lakers season up into three chunks, where you have the 15-4 start, which LeBron misses a part of that. It comes back. They have that 7-game mm-hmm. win streak. December 1st, everything falls off the rails. From December 1st through late February, they go 19-20. They have a prolonged stretch midway through the season. They are under 500. They lose basically every big game they play. And then right after like the low point of the season, they have that 3-game losing streak with Boston and Orlando and Phoenix. They find another gear and go to a completely different level that I think we all thought was in there, but we just had not seen it like 2/3 of the way through the season. And then they have the 16-2 stretch. They close the season 19-5 overall. Luka and Austin go out, but then they continue that momentum they had to close the season, win the first round series, and then lose in four to Oklahoma City. So I think if we just look at it objectively, they won more games. They won more playoff games and went further in the postseason. We saw some real progress with the big three. Luka was better than he was last season. Austin was better than he was last season. JJ was better than he was last season. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a lot to like, and a lot, like I think Rob used the term proud but not satisfied. I think that's an appropriate way to categorize the season. At the same time, I think we saw like that there's a pretty big gap between them and OKC, and don't quite know how big the gap is, but between them and San Antonio, but like San Antonio might beat OKC or give them the, you know, most competitive series by far that they've had so far in the playoffs. So it's like those two teams right now are not going anywhere. They both should be notably better next year and potentially right. even better the next 2 to 3 years. So it's like the Lakers have a big challenge ahead of them in terms of getting to that level. And that's why, as you said a bit earlier, like this is a huge offseason.
Yeah, it just reminds me of when I was in school, I was like relatively smart, but I was lazy. And I would like, I would, you know, pass a quiz or something like that. And I would get like a, you know, an 85 or something. And I would come home with a quiz or with a test and be like, hell yeah, I got an 85 on a test I didn't even study for. And my dad would be like, okay, but like, try studying. You know, like imagine what you could do if you studied. And I feel like that's how the Lakers are kind of looking at the season. It's like, hell yeah, we showed resiliency and fans like wound up liking this. I am going to miss this team because of the resiliency that you kind of talked about. The way that they, you know, did rally. I remember coming out of the trade deadline after they didn't do anything. And it looked like a team that had let go of the rope so often in so many of their games and gotten blown out. It looked like they were going to let go of the season altogether. And then, like you said, they make that turnaround. LeBron accepts that third role kind of, or you know, option three role that he played in. And the Lakers turn things around, go 16-2, and then, you know, win that series against Houston. And it's like, yeah, like that was great. That was a really fun season, you know, for a team that didn't really prepare for this season specifically. They had their mind on next year. And I'm always going to kind of like, I always just kind of hear my dad's voice in the back of my head here saying like, yeah, but imagine if you cared about this season, like imagine what that could have looked like. And, you know, some people might say, well, Luka got hurt anyway and Austin got hurt anyway. So if they would have traded for stuff at the deadline, those guys get hurt. You don't know that that's actually how it's going to play out. I would maybe even argue that if they had improve the roster by more than just Luke Kennard, that maybe those guys don't have to play as hard and as many minutes as they did towards the end of the season. And maybe they don't wear down and maybe they're available for these playoffs. We'll never know. But I do think from a, you know, from the perspective of how I'll remember the team and the guys, I think it was a very successful season. I you know, it was fun to watch this team kind of rally around each other to the extent that they did. From a JJ Redick perspective, I think it was also really kind of fun to watch him really kind of grow on the job. And I thought he was significantly better in year two than year one, especially in the playoffs. And then, you know, from the front office perspective, again, they did the best with what they allowed themselves to do. But I'm also always going to kind of wonder, like, as I have for the last basically 3 or 4 LeBron seasons, what could that season have looked like if you, you know, committed a few more chips to the middle of the pot with LeBron over the last few years and now with Luka and LeBron on the same roster, which is probably, Jovan, why we've gotten some of the reports over the last week or so that seemed to be kind of from LeBron's side of it. You know, the reporting seems to be or reflect what LeBron thinks of the situation that he finds himself in, what Clutch seems to find itself in. And I do kind of, you know, the Lakers are going into this offseason and would be hugely beneficial to them if LeBron accepted the kind of contract that he is going to have to sign if he does leave and he goes to Golden State, or if he went to Cleveland, he would probably be on a mid-level there. And if the Lakers had maybe committed more chips to the pot over the course of the last few years, and that question from LeBron of like, hey, are you guys ever going to try while I'm here? Maybe he would feel a little bit better or different about, you know, leaving some money on the table and signing up for whatever this roster might look like. And I don't know if that's how you've been kind of reading the situation, but as we've been hearing about how annoyed he was at game balls and all of these other things, like those seem like annoyances that pop up as like final straws on camel's backs, you know, and I feel like the real problem, the real crux of the issue here, if there is one between, and we know that there probably is one between LeBron and the Lakers, is that he probably feels like he's been kind of yanked around for the last 3 years or so.
I agree. I think it's a complicated relationship, to say the least, right? And I think both sides have their grievance points, that makes sense, right? And I think both sides have their arguments for why they've been wronged or taken advantage of or whatever. But I think objectively, if we take a step back and just look at the last few years, like, the Lakers have not put together championship level teams for several years now. And I think I really don't think there's an argument against just plainly stating, like, they have mismanaged the end of the LeBron James era. And now, I mean, the LeBron era sort of over in a way, because it's now the Luka era, right? And they're on a new timeline with Luka. Now Luka's in his prime. So in theory, they should be going for it now and should be trying to put the best possible team around him now and not thinking about the future. But you just look at, like, post Westbrook trade through, we'll say, January 31st, 2025, like, the Lakers did not get anywhere close to putting a championship level roster around LeBron and AD. And that, I think, is disappointing. And so I don't want to get too much into the interpersonal stuff. And sure, have there been some things that have rubbed both sides the wrong way? And are there things that Lakers could have done better? Are there things LeBron could have done better? Like, yes, I think both of those things are true. I just think the primary thing, and we even heard this when he opted in last summer, was like, he wants to be on a championship level team. And I just don't think they have truly invested to the maximum degree, and have been in this, like, sort of no man's land of, they're good, they are gonna push for high 40s, low 50s wins, they might win a round, but they're not actually going to be competing for a championship. And they've been stuck in that purgatory dating back to 2022. And I think at this point, like, when he feels like he hasn't been given a proper shake for, like, the roster and the investment, and then now they're coming at his money too, it's like, at some point I think he feels a bit disrespected. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how the contract stuff plays out this summer.
It is fascinating how this could play out for LeBron, because we know he's extremely prideful when it comes to, like, let's get this out of the way. No matter what number he plays at next year, even if it's a max, is probably a discount compared to the amount of revenue he's going to generate for whatever team that he plays for, right? Because it's probably going to be a farewell tour. There's probably going to be all kinds of coverage. Their tickets are going to sell out like crazy. The ratings on all of the games that he plays in next year are going to be out of this world, right? Every single arena that he goes to next year, if this is a farewell tour, is going to be packed, you know, and it'll be in part because he'll be out on that court. So, like, if you're LeBron and you know that you're going to generate X amount of revenue, and meanwhile, you're looking at a season where you're probably playing on a contract at most, probably like $30 million at like most, I don't think he's getting much more than that. You're probably saying, well, wait, why would I play? You know, like, and by the way, if he plays on this Lakers roster, if he plays in Golden State, if he plays in Cleveland, I don't know that he would walk into any of those situations and be like, yep, we're definitely winning a championship here. We're definitely better than OKC. We're definitely better than San Antonio. Might not even be better than New York or Detroit. I guess he technically could sign for the minimum in New York. His decision is going to be fascinating whenever he makes it. And by the way, he's going to have to make it relatively quickly, because either he's going to make a decision and he and the Lakers are going to land on a number, before the draft, or the Lakers are just going to renounce his rights. Like, they're just going to, cause they have to open up the cap space that they're hoping to operate with this year. And they can't operate with that cap space so long as LeBron's cap hold is on their books. So as much as Rob Pelinka wants to say that, like, yeah, we want to honor LeBron, by giving him as much time as he needs to make this decision, he's also kind of sort of looking at his phone like, all right, man, like, all right, Rich, like, what are we doing? You know, and it, that's another like element of all of this that's going to be fascinating. So, and like the other thing too, like just to really, really quickly wrap up the, you know, whether or not this season is a success, by the Lakers' own definition, it wasn't a success, right? They didn't actually, not only did they not win a championship, but they haven't vied for a championship, as you kind of talked about over the last few years. And for LeBron, he has done enough to keep his body in good enough shape to compete for a championship. He has upheld his end of that bargain, and year in, year out, he's watched the Lakers draft Jalen Hood-Schifino, and he watched them draft Dalton Knecht rather than use those picks on guys who would help win now. And not only did they not use those picks on guys who would help win now, but those guys also, Jalen Hood-Schifino is basically out of the league. Dalton Knecht is probably going to be in a different organization next year, you know, and hasn't, you know, the Lakers don't have much to show for that stuff. And you know, if you're LeBron, you're kind of like, I don't know what else I was supposed to do here, you know? And if anything, if I'm LeBron, I'm annoyed at the fact that he operated in Miami and in Cleveland twice over with shorter term contracts, and he held the organization's feet to the fire. And that led to trip after trip after trip to the finals. He didn't do that with the Lakers for whatever reason. And it led to a very mid-tier experience here with the Lakers, to an extent where the discussion over this over the last couple of days has been, was LeBron's Lakers tenure a failure? And does that reflect poorly on LeBron? And it's like, if I'm LeBron, I'm saying, why would it reflect poorly on me? I did my job. Those guys didn't.
I mean, the whole conversation about is it a failure is silly to me. Like, he won a championship. That's I think based on the past or the 8 prior years of LeBron's playoff career going into his Lakers tenure, right? It was 8 straight finals, and he went 3-5 in those finals. Sure, like by that standard, I think failure is too binary to me. Like, if we are going to speak that binary, then I would say it's not a failure. If you want to have some shades of gray, like, I would say it was probably a 65th percent. Like, this whole tenure has been like a 65th like percentile, maybe 70th percentile, where you made, you know, won a championship and you made a conference finals. But if you, like, if you just kind of told me if you said LeBron, like, go back to 2018 and you know, we'll have someone come from the future, or, you know, go back to our previous selves and say, hey, LeBron's going to be in LA for 8 years. He's going to play with Anthony Davis for 5 years. He's going to play with Luka Doncic for a couple years. And without any context, really, just kind of those basic things, you'd be like, oh, LeBron won like 3 championships, maybe or they are perennially like a Western Conference Finals team. Like, that would be how you would expect that to have gone. And maybe there's a year or two where they come a little short, but come up short.
And then you say, but he also played with Russell Westbrook. Oh, shoot. All right.
Well, I left out that part. I mean, that's actually a pretty big part of it. I don't know. I even just like the LeBron AD tenure, like if you think about 2019 through 2025, like, they have one championship and one conference finals. And then the other 4 years, it was first round exits or missing the playoffs entirely. And that just with two players of that caliber who are, I think in totality, if you aggregated their like overall ranks in, like, those are two top 10 players for 5 years together that you just didn't have I mean, I don't want to say you don't have a lot to show for it, because a championship is a championship, but I just mean, like, in general, that should have been a perennial Western Conference Finals team, and it just wasn't.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky here. I agree that, like, you need to be able to dive into the shades of gray, because from a Lakers standpoint, if they have, like, historically, if they've had a superstar of LeBron's stature, that player wins multiple championships. So by the Lakers' own definition, historically, this wasn't the overwhelming success that it probably maybe should have been. And then from LeBron's standpoint, you know, he goes somewhere, he wins at least the one championship, maybe even two, especially if he has a teammate of Anthony Davis's. But it's also funny because the one championship that they won probably cost them a real opportunity at future championships, because you saw how long it took all four of those teams to recover from the bubble and from the quick turnaround that they had the following year. And their best chance really at a championship in terms of the personnel on their team was the following year. Unfortunately, that season started five business days later. So, like, you know, and that's an older LeBron. It's an Anthony Davis who, you know, has his own injury concerns and stuff like that. And that those guys weren't able to hold up. So I don't
Solomon
know.
Hill.
He's in that like Tim Thomas range, you know, like I can't hear the name Solomon Hill or Tim Thomas and not attach an F word to the beginning or the end of it. But yeah, like with the other stat that I think is also, you know, kind of telling is that like of the cores over the last, like, what is it, 5 or 6 years since the 2020 championship, of those cores that have won a ring in that time, only the Lakers and Oklahoma City Thunder like have gotten back even to a conference championship. We're living in this like era of parity, and how many of those teams
and the
like
Lakers were a much different team, that like new coach,
yeah,
basically entirely new roster outside of LeBron and AD. So it was like a complete, whereas, you know, OKC is like the one team to go back actually in like the, you know, the following season to have a championship defense. So I mean, it's just it's changed recently.
Yeah, and so yeah, you factor it all, you kind of throw it all together, and I'm going to look back on the LeBron era, if it is indeed over, and I'm going to look back on it, you know, and think it was a success. That 2020 championship meant so much, you know, when you consider everything that was going on, not just in the world, obviously with COVID and stuff like that, but in Los Angeles specifically, you lose Kobe that year and sports shut down and, you know, there's all of the question as to like, will things ever open back up again? And really for LA sports fans, that team was something that we could all kind of rally around. And that, I, you know, and LeBron was at the center of all of that, you know, and that's why it's been kind of a bummer to see that relationship kind of erode to the point where we are right now, where LeBron is talking about, there are leaks about frustrations over who gets game balls, and there are leaks coming out about frustrations over having to employ Bronny, and these are the kinds of back and forths you'll see in the media that kind of precede some negotiations that might get somewhat contentious, and how do you see this playing out? Like, I've thought all year, just based on his options, that I think LeBron is going to be back. But with kind of the sniping back and forth over the last week or so, it has made me wonder a little bit more than maybe I thought I was going to coming into the offseason.
There has been a lot of stuff coming out, we'll say, in the last few days, right? The aftermath of the season. Now, I don't think that's necessarily unique. I think that typically happens, especially with the Lakers. And I've been a part of a couple of those, postseason stories, aftermath stories, autopsies. So I get it. And I think that's just part of the media cycle. But it's going to be interesting to see how the Lakers approach this, because I do think if you go back to last offseason, there was no conversation about the extension or furthering the partnership. And it does feel like the messaging that has been coming out from Clutch and the LeBron side of things has been more, we want to be courted. We want LeBron to feel respected. And it's not as simple as just saying, hey, we can offer you more than everybody else, so take this discount. It's actually like it starts at or LeBron viewing it as like, I'm worth X, which could be 40, 45, 50, whatever he thinks that number is. I was an all-star. I was the best player on a underman group that won a first round series. I was the best player on the team for the entirety of the playoffs. I deserve X amount of money. And it's on the Lakers to court him and to make him feel a certain way and to drive that price down and be like, yes, we understand from just like a pure production perspective and just how great you still are, you're worth X. But for us to build a championship roster, which you've talked about, that's still like your primary goal, we need you to take Y. And if you take Y, we can do Z and A and B and C and build out this roster. Because the Lakers could pay LeBron $50 million. If they pay LeBron $50 million, I mean, they could technically go over the cap with some of the guys with bird rights, but then you're at best just running it back and maybe making like one small addition. At worst, you're still losing a couple of your key free agents and then running it back with like a worse roster, or maybe you made like a small tweak, but you're still probably just as good as now, if not like a little bit worse. So they have to get him, they have to find a way to convince him to take probably like half of what he thinks he's worth. And it's going to be interesting to see, because especially with some of the stuff that came out from that ESPN article, I don't know, like it feels like the Lakers aren't necessarily going to go out of their way to do that. And I am also going to be curious to see who the messenger is in terms of from the Lakers side, like who is potentially the one trying to court him or you know, whatever. So I would still err on the side of him returning, but it does feel like with how much of a push has come out, and even his comment about being like the third option in his exit interview, I just think it's clear that that was, you know, just something that like he embraced and he did in the moment and he thrived in that role, but clearly was not something that he anticipated having to do this season, nor necessarily wanted to do. So I think like the more I talk about it, the more I start to like kind of talk myself out of him returning, but I'm going to like continue to base it in reality in that, like, I just think they're gonna come to some sort of agreement, or that would be my prediction right now, but certainly it could also go off the rails at any moment. And like, if it gets too contentious, or if the Lakers aren't willing to try to massage the situation and are just playing like, hey, we think you're worth $25 million. Here's an offer, like then I could see where that goes south very quickly and he decides to pivot and go elsewhere.
It's tough because the Lakers are basically the only, like, they're put them in a spot where they are expected to give like the opposite of a hometown discount, like because they have more money to be able to offer. The expectation is you'd better offer that money, and from the Lakers' perspective, they're thinking no. Like, you know, and you know, based on some of the, you know, little things that I've been hearing here and there, like there is a sense from the Lakers side where they would like to just fully embrace the Luka Doncic era and just, you know, flip that page and see what it looks like if they can turn LeBron's cap slot into two or three, you know, one starter and maybe another couple solid role players, you know, just mathematically. And my retort when I hear that stuff is always like, you realize how good he was though, right? In whatever role that the Lakers needed him to play, you know, by the end of the season, he was in his more kind of traditional role. He was good there. When the Lakers needed him and when JJ Redick approached him, and Luka and Austin about how they need the slot in order for the team to make the most sense, LeBron was quite good in that tertiary option role. And also, like, there's a decent shot that he goes within the Lakers' own division. He goes to Golden State and he plays with Steph on a team that is trying to acquire Giannis Antetokounmpo. And now all of a sudden, if that team gets LeBron at the mid-level, and also, you know, turns Jimmy Butler's, you know, cap spot into Giannis somehow, some way. Well, now all of a sudden you're dealing with that four times within your own division, and you got a LeBron who feels slighted by the front office for not courting him. I don't necessarily want to walk into that next season. That's not something I would be particularly looking forward to. And you know, there's also the Clippers noise. I don't really buy the Clippers noise so much. I don't see him playing for the JV team, but like the Warriors scenario, that makes me nervous enough to where I would say to the Lakers, hey, be careful. Like, just have a little bit of tact here. Like, recognize also, like, the thing that annoyed me, I don't know if you took this the same way, but that parlor game that they were reportedly playing where they were telling people, hey, look at this guy without the LeBron name attached to it. And it's like, how could you try to detach the guy's name who almost single-handedly dug you out of the mud, you know, the last 8 years or however long he's been a Laker, you know? And if I'm LeBron, I'm thinking, why would you detach that from me? I helped you guys out. I was a free agent. I could have gone anywhere. And yet now here at the end, you're kind of treating me like this, and we'll see how all of that lands. The other, you know, big decision that the Lakers have ahead of them here is Austin's number. And that's another one that I think can get somewhat tricky here, in that I thought he did get better over the course of that OKC series. I do think that he started to kind of recognize, okay, I have to operate in the mid-range here and stay under control and not get so far downhill against the defense that's this quick and so good at throwing those counter punches. So I do think next year he would probably be better against that same OKC defense moving forward. But there are still athleticism questions in a backcourt with him and Luka Doncic. There are athleticism questions on a team that, you know, is somewhat cap strapped and options strapped, you know, as far as backline defense. So that makes, you know, Luka and Austin's defensive questions all the louder. How do you see this playing out? I'd be shocked if Austin wasn't a Laker next year, but how do you see this playing out here as far as how those negotiations go, what kind of contract we're looking at, all of that good stuff?
I would be shocked too. I mean, I said this on my show in the aftermath of the exit interviews, like if you go back and, cause I went back and rewatched it just to finalize my notes before I went live. And it was like, you see when Rob gets asked about LeBron and Austin, he addresses LeBron first. And when he shifts to Austin, he immediately lights
smile.
Up. And, yeah. And then it's talking about there's mutual interest. Like, you know, Austin's talked about how he wants to remain a Laker. And I mean, yep. I thought it was a pretty strong endorsement from Rob in terms of wanting to keep Austin. And then you also had the Athletic report come out, ESPN report, both indicated that the Lakers want to keep Austin. Luka wants to keep Austin. Luka and Austin. Even talking about if there's a potential Giannis trade or a trade for another star, that Luka doesn't want them to put Austin in that type of deal. So I think all of the tea leaves have been pointing or indicating that Austin is going to be back. We've only gotten further confirmation of that after the season. Now, I think the big question is, what is the number? The thing I've been saying, and I think I maybe even said this on here, but, you know, not too long ago, maybe a couple months ago, like, technically, Austin's number does not impact what the Lakers are going to be doing, because they're going to create the cap space that they're going to create with Austin on that $22 million cap hold. So right. Whether he makes $30 million or he makes the max starting out at $41 million, it's only a matter of how much deeper are the Lakers past the cap. And there will be an impact later, right? Obviously, like how the contract ages, and as we look at future iterations of the Lakers cap sheet, there will of course be an impact based on, is Austin at 30, 33, 36, somewhere in there, versus Austin at 41, 44, 47. So I'm not saying it does not matter, but I do see a lot of misinformation out there of like, well, if they can keep Austin at 30, we can go do this. And it's like, no, that's not how this works. The Lakers are going to
keep Austin at 22,
go do everything. And then once you figure out the rest of the roster, you come back to Austin, sign whatever contract you're going to sign, and then you go above the cap for that total. And it will be, again, if it's $30 million, that's an $8 million increase over his cap hold, or roughly eight or nine. If it's 40, that's a, you know, $19, $20 million jump. Now, what that number looks like, I think for an older guy, Austin's about to turn 28. So he's like smack dab in his prime. I think he's going to push for a 5-year deal, and that's going to be his preference to get the, I mean, maybe like a 4+1 with a player option in year five, but some sort of 4+1 or 5 will be his preference to just get maximum amount of years, maximum amount of security. If you're the Lakers, maybe you can leverage that into a little bit of a smaller contract of like, you know, for 4 years, we'll go X amount annually. For 5 years, we want that annual value a little bit lower, but like you're getting the 5th year and extra security. If I had to make a guess, I think it's going to end up in the 5-year, $200 million range. So that is not the max. The most he can make is 5 years, 240. It would be a little bit lower, but I do think the average annual value is going to be somewhere in the high 30s, if not around. So like, if I had to like bet on a, I'm betting on a range that like it has to fall into, otherwise I'm gonna disintegrate. I'd say like 5 years 180 to 5 years 200, but I would err probably a little bit closer to the 200 mark. So he's taking $40 million less than his max. That ends up being like about $40 million annually over the lifetime of the deal. But really, it's probably starting low 30s and then progressing by like around $3 million each year. So that would be my bet right now. But what do you think? What would you think that number ends up?
Yeah, I would say it's in that 35 to 40 range. I would actually like to see if they could have that contract descend, you know, like if you're Austin and you're getting the same amount of money regardless, could you, if you're Rob, could you see if
you can do like 41, 39, 37, 35, 33, something like that, and have it right progressively descend.
I would like to see if you could maybe do that. It makes it easier, like a lot easier to trade guys if that is where this eventually winds up, right? Because unfortunately, you know, and I should have mentioned this at the top when we were talking about whether or not this season was a success. One reason that I could maybe point to it maybe not being a success is because we didn't find out anything as far as the Luka Austin combination in the postseason. We still don't know. And and that was probably the most important question that they needed to answer this year. So, and obviously it we didn't get that answer because of circumstances and because of just shit luck. But at the end of the day, that is a question that went unanswered, and you're going to be signing him to this contract, and you're going to be committing to the Luka Austin backcourt for the, you know, to the tune of almost $100 million a year for the next 4 or 5 years, and you're doing so blind, and that makes me nervous about that. I have, I think, maybe a little bit more confidence in that backcourt than most, depending on the team that's built around them. But at the end of the day, I think it does matter the kind of contract, meaning the structure of the contract that Austin signs here, because if it doesn't work out, you're going to lose a little bit of leverage in those trade negotiations. And if you sign like a contract that descends a little bit, that wins you back some of the leverage that you would lose by trading after you find out that maybe that pair doesn't work long-term. The other thing here that I wanted to ask you about, you know, there's been kind of a debate, externally and internally, as far as the Lakers' priority here in upgrading around Luka and around Austin. And I'm of the mindset that the center spot is their most important spot that they need to upgrade at, that they need an elite presence at. Unfortunately, the market isn't going to allow them, I don't think, to land that player, in short order. But I think I've always thought maybe wings for a long time, but I've kind of completely landed on centers being most important. If you had the choice here, you know, and let's say it was a similar caliber player, one was a wing, one was a center that you could pursue, where would you start in building a roster around Luka and Austin?
It's really tough because I go back and forth. I think the honest answer is both. If I have to pick, I kind of lean wing still because I think it's easier to find bargain bin centers. I think any two-way wing of a certain caliber is going to be making 25 plus million if they're not on the rookie scale contract. And the Lakers have not been drafting those guys, which I think is its own issue with, like, if you look at who they've drafted recently, it has been a lot of scoring guards when that's been an area that they have like kind of needed off the bench, but have like, yeah. I mean, you can find like Malik Beasley goes for a minimum contract a couple years ago, or Gary Trent Jr. or like whatever, like there are guys out there that you can find in that mold. It's really difficult to find these two-way wings that I think the smartest teams in the league just continue to pluck in the mid to late first round or early second round. So that to me has been an area the Lakers have not been able to address for years. And I think it's an area that I just think if like it's harder, like you can go bargain bin hunting and find like even a Kata, right? Who or an Ayton, either one of those guys, like, were they up to the level that you needed from a center position to win a championship? Like, no, but you could be a really good team with either one of those guys. I think it's a little bit trickier to have a placeholder wing that isn't of a certain level. And again, I think once you get to a certain percentile on both sides of the ball, you're just going to be priced out. So I would say if the Lakers can acquire a two-way wing, a true two-way wing, like we're talking a guy who at a minimum is like an above league average 3-point shooter and, or is like a, you know, more in the Peyton Watson mold where he could do a lot more in terms of shot creation and, you know, scoring off the dribble. Yeah. Like that is like the bare minimum on offense. And then defensively, they've got to be ideally like an all defense caliber guy who can defend multiple positions. And if it were up to me, someone in the 6'7 to 6'9 range, I think it's got to be someone with some size and physically imposing. So those guys are tough to find. Those guys are not readily available. If they are available, they're often for asking for at least two first round picks for that type of guy, even if it's like a role player. Like if you're trying to get a Tamani Kamara, it's going to cost you at least two first round picks. And also if I'm Portland, I'm like, why am I even trading him? Doesn't really make any sense. So I would say though, the answer is both. Now, if you look at the two avenues to acquiring these players, I think the center is more likely in free agency and the wing is more likely on the trade market. I don't really see a wing outside like Watson and Eason, but they're both restricted free agents. And like Eason, I'm still not sure how I feel about him. I would probably prefer him as a bench player than a starter. And then the center market though, like you have Kessler and Durin, also both RFAs, but like that, you know, they're at a certain level. Maybe you get a discount with like a Mitchell Robinson or a Robert Williams. But I think the center market is going to be stronger in free agency and the wing market's going to be stronger in trades. But between the two, I still think the answer is both. I think ideally they go into next year with two new starters around Luka, LeBron, and Austin. And if you have like those, you know, those two new guys plus those three and like Rui and Marcus as your top seven, I think that's a really strong top seven.
Yeah. And then like, you know, I think they're expecting big things from Thero next year. Maybe Bronny takes another step forward next year. And then we'll see what they do with 25. We have a super comment and then we will get you out of here. But before we get to that super comment, we have to play the most important sound on the show. All right. The question here comes from the Wannabe GMs podcast who asks or who writes ideal/realistic offseason. Luka leaves. Oh, no. Luka Reeves, Braun.
It's like that's not an ideal offseason.
It's like, whoa, hold on. Luka Reeves, Braun, Kuminga Turner, Smart using the room exception, Gary Trent Jr. using him on the minimum, Matisse Thybulle for $6 million, Rui making $20 million a year on a 4-year. I don't think they would sign him to a 4-year contract. And then Hayes with a slight pay raise, And this wannabe GM saved both late first rounders. Would that be your ideal offseason outcome?
We've, I think wannabe GM's podcast floated a similar trade to me, or was pushing for Turner. And at first I was out on Turner. Then I became a little bit more open to it, but I think it would be dependent on LA either getting a first from Milwaukee or dumping Vando in the deal. So then Vando's got two more years left at around $24 million. Turner's got three more years left at like almost, I mean, it's a lot. It's like almost over 75. It's like $80 million for over the next 3 years. So the logic would be, you're dumping Vando. You don't have to attach a first to dump Vando. Like that's like the one way. I think there's like two ways to dump Vando. You either attach a first or you take like a worse contract. Turner's got an extra year and he's making double the amount of you know, more than double the amount of Vando over each of the next 2 years, then plus the third year. I'm not a big Kuminga guy. I don't think he's a starter on a championship team right now. I think he could be a rotation guy, but so I would still say I don't think you are good enough or good enough rebounding with this group. I think it's also a smaller group from like I wouldn't say they're like physically imposing. There's not a lot of strength or power within the overall rotation, in my opinion. But you are more athletic and you know, Thybulle would help off the bench. Gary Trent Jr. would come in and be that type of shooter and guy who could get hot. But I just don't view Kuminga as that. I guess in this build, Kuminga is your two-way wing, and I just don't view him at that level, especially for a group. Like I just, you know, Kuminga Turner to me doesn't really get me excited.
Did you, would you be higher or lower on Miles Turner if you found out that he was telling you about things that were going on within the locker room and organizationally last year?
I mean, personally, I'd be higher, but
it is better for us. That is true. Here's a clip. Yeah. I just saw it's making the rounds right now on like, as you and I have been talking, here's Turner talking about his experience as a Milwaukee Buck last year.
And for all types of stuff now, you guys can find a lot.
It depends on the coach. So Doc Rivers, he didn't find anybody. Guys were late all the time. Guys were, you know, showing up to film whenever they wanted to show up. Guys were missing meetings. Like, it was one of the craziest things I personally ever experienced. We literally, if the plane took off at 2 o'clock, we weren't leaving until 4:30. I'm being so serious, bro. It was crazy, dog. Guys were an hour late to the plane. It got to the point where I knew not to show up until like an hour after they said the plane was taking off. It was crazy.
So who's the teammate that's most likely to be late? Well, all of yours, obviously, because nobody gets fined.
Giannis is going to show up whenever he wants, really. You know, I think that this kind of just came with the territory at that. And once I kind of saw what was going down, I was like, hey, man, more power to you. They ain't going to fine you. Do what you do.
Right.
Except when we're going to Dallas. That's when I was like, all right, come on.
Right now we're getting fined for missed free throw box outs.
Now, honestly, that's a good one. I'm not mad at that. I'm actually not mad at that at all.
Well, we're a little bit mad about it. Because it's like, all right, well, what if the ball goes out of bounds? There's no possession. What if, like, there's always caveats to it. Yeah, bad bounce.
That's real.
Wow. I mean, I think that was like Miles Turner soft launching a trade request.
It's certainly probably like if the Lakers are interested in Giannis, I don't think he can acquire Miles Turner. Like he's just straight saying, yeah, that dude's not a professional. It was funny while he was talking, I was kind of like, well, I kind of like that he took offense to people not being very professional. But same time, if I'm in his locker room, I'm
that's something you got to keep internally. You can't be. I think that's something you can maybe. You can maybe share if you left the if he had been traded and he was doing his first like post trade podcast, even then it's not like the best look, but you can talk about something like that. But to still be on the team with Giannis, like they're going to have a new head. I mean, they have a new head coach in Taylor Jenkins, but it just that's pretty interesting.
I don't think he's going to be on the team. after that. And then we got one last question here before we have to get you out of here. Buy low on Misi as your starting center, saves you money. That's something that the Lakers have done the last few years where they try to like buy low or gamble on the center spot. And I just don't think you can do that, like especially not in the West. You're going up against Wemby. You're going up against Jokic. You're going up against that huge Minnesota front line. You're going up against OKC's I Hart and Chet combo. I just don't think you can, like, you know, Ayton was like really good value all year. Ayton was like one of the better case scenarios that the Lakers could have gotten from him. And by the end of the series, it was like, JJ Redick is literally saying, I can't play that guy. And, I'm kind of done with that approach to the center spot, but I would like to buy low on Misi as like Jackson's replacement. I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah. I like Misi. I don't know if he could be a starter on a contender. I think that's still, I mean, he's still pretty young, so it's open-ended, but I would say to bring it back to like the whole center versus wing conversation, I think you can do, I know Pete has been big on this of like maybe do some sort of makeshift, like three-headed center rotation that do you bring in Robert Williams, you know, if DA opts in and you just only have so many salaries you can dump. And like, that's actually one of the ones that, at least on like a production standpoint, you can justify the $8 million for DA compared to the 12 plus for Vando or like the 4 plus for Dalton or whatever. Like there's probably other contracts you'd rather dump. So maybe it is, do we get some sort of, like we use part of the room exception on Robert Williams and then you have Williams, DA and Jackson. It's like not obviously the best center rotation, but you have three guys who can kind of fit different needs. And then the wing spot is where you heavily invest in. Cause I think the inverse is like, well, if you get the Durin or the Kessler or whoever, now you're talking about kind of running it back with the same group that eventually they defended at a certain level late in the season or you know, during that 16-2 stretch and then in the playoffs. But for being honest, like, I mean, they ranked 20th in defensive rating on the season. They were a bottom 10 defense for most of the season. I think if we're looking at their top eight players, they have maybe like one consistent above average defender in their rotation. They need to change that. And the center spot is a part of that. But I also just think in general, they need more two-way wings and guys who can defend multiple positions. And I think just take their defense to a different level. So I guess if you have to like piece it together at one spot, the center spot could be that position, but you have to like really nail it and I think have better players than you had this season. But I think the wing it's still a little bit tricky. Unless you just nail like you nail the 25th pick and you get some, you know, sleeper who's like immediately ready to contribute, barring something like that, I think you probably have to invest more on the perimeter.
Yeah. And even then, like if somebody slides as far down to 25 as like say Dalton did to, you know, 14 or whatever the Lakers drafted at that year, like that makes me nervous. And I was like, wait, why'd he slide? I need to know. can that person read a playbook? Jovan, I've taken up too much of your time. Thank you very much for hopping on. As always, check out Jovan's work on Buha's Block and on the Lakers Collective, as well as the Great Western Forum pods that he and Pete and I record. We'll have one of those coming up relatively soon as well to do an autopsy on the previous season and start to look ahead to the off season as well. Anything else? Did I just see you say that you're going to go live for the Drake album drop?
We'll see. We'll see where I'm at later in the day. If I'm, capable of talking in a few hours, but I'm tentatively planning to go live.
I said this to you in the chat in your and my and Pete's group chat that I don't think I've ever listened to a Drake song from like start to finish, and that's the only text you have ever, like, you know, the respond thing that you could. You disliked the text. I didn't realize you were that big of a Drake fan. I had no idea.
I got some Drake stuff behind me. I'm a pretty big Drake fan.
You and Raj.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is going to do it, though. And that's going to do it for this week's episodes here on The Lounge. I'm going to take a page out of Jovan's book and take tomorrow off while I probably am going to do some radio hits as well. But tomorrow, no show tomorrow. And then Sunday, we're doing this. I don't need to talk too much about it into detail or whatever. But the scheduling the show for Monday morning might get a little tricky. So I might either release Monday show in podcast form on Sunday, or you'll get it later Monday afternoon. But regardless, I'll let you guys know how that's playing out whenever it's playing out. Thank you very much for Jovan, to Jovan for hopping on. Have a great rest of your week. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys on Sunday.